No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. It's been a couple of weeks. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals. It's their team site. And he also is host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And Seth, we are finally here because this is our training camp preview show. And how excited are you for real fake football?
Oh, it's going to be exciting. I mean, we're finally, like you said, we're finally here. The dregs of the off season are done. Thank goodness. We can start talking about, you know, guys running 40 or running at camp and who looks good in shorts that gets cut a couple weeks later. It's going to be really, I mean, the first week of camp is always all you're hoping for is just no injuries. But you know, there are some actual intriguing questions heading into this season for the Cardinals. So maybe there's some intrigue heading into camp. But for the most part, I mean, you and I were talking about before the show, this is a fairly set roster with, you know, fairly defined roles. So this isn't the intrigue is this a good team?
And that's the biggest question. I mean, there's not much. I mean, really, over the last couple, it's been 3 weeks since we last had a show. Nothing has happened. I mean, there's been the typical off-season stuff that's not really nothing meaningful. Bruce Arians had his book come out, The Quarterback Whisperer, with the work with Lars Anderson. We're not going to really go in-depth to that, but there were some interesting things that he talked about there. Some revealing things about his health and some whatnot. But that's about wraps that up, and we are ready to talk about training camp and actual battles and roster stuff. And so this is what we've got on tap for this show. What are the questions entering camp for the Cardinals? Seth and I have each come up with four questions about the team, and we'll discuss those. We're going to talk about our players to watch. Each of us has picked five players that we want to see this for whatever reason. We're going to talk about some of the intriguing position battles. And we're going to talk about some of the, perhaps, I mean, every year, it happens every year, there are some undrafted players that steal the hearts of the fans and the coaching staff, and they don't necessarily become anything, but who could be those players this camp? And, you know, then we're going to kind of wrap it up with or any predictions or surprises that we expect to see over camp. And so that's what we're going to start up. We're going to go ahead and get this started. There's not much else to delay. So let's go ahead and get started with the questions entering camp. Seth and I both, again, like I said, have four burning questions as we head into camp. And so let's have Seth reveal his first question about the Cardinals as we start the new, you know, the beginning of what will eventually be the 2017 season.
I think the biggest question on offense, and I only had one on offense because I don't know if there's, I mean, a ton of questions, but the biggest question on offense to me is the offensive line fixed? We've both written about it. We've talked about it on the show. The Cardinals have invested ad nauseum in this offensive line. The equivalent, I always say, of four first-round picks with Jared Valdir's big contract, Mikey Potty's big contract, obviously two first-round picks and Jonathan Cooper and DJ Humphreys. Is it fixed now? Is it going to be maybe not, you know, maybe not a top five, maybe not even top 10, but is it at least going to be top half of the league again? Is it going to be as good as 2015 where they had, you know, Bobby Massey, Lyle Cinnaline, you know, holdovers from the old regime mixed in with Veldier and Upati, and then the rotating question mark at right guard. That's been the best offensive line of the Keim and Arians era, and is it fixed? I mean, that's really, for me, there might be some other questions, but that's really the only question that matters on the offense, because we've seen if the offensive line is struggling, it's going to trickle into struggles for Carson Palmer, which, as we all know, that just means a long season for the Arizona Cardinals.
And one of my four questions is also about the offensive line. Not necessarily is it fixed, but will the players playing out of position step up? I mean, will they take the necessary steps forward? Because they've got three players who changed positions over last year, two of which have never played the position before. So you've still got EQ Shipley at center. You've still got Mike Iupati at left guard. But you moved DJ Humphreys from right tackle to left tackle. Now, left tackle is his natural position, and he looked good last year. But is he an NFL left tackle? We believe he can be. He showed it. He flashed it. But Gerald Veldier, who was more than just an average, he was above average, a very capable left tackle, he's now moving to the right side where he's never played even a rep of practice in the NFL or even in college, and this year being the first time he's doing it. Will there be issues? And then you've got Evan Bain, a guy who drafted as a center, flashed a little bit at right guard, got stronger, transformed his body in the offseason, but he's playing right guard. He's never played right guard before. He played left guard his freshman year of college and then center the rest of the way. So the Cardinals are and it's kind of like this in a lot of ways. They're banking on the progress of a lot of players who haven't shown anything yet. I mean, Veldier's got a solid career, a very good career. But we don't know what he is as a right tackle. We're not sure if DJ Humphreys is ready to be left tackle. We think he is. And Evan Bain, that's a complete unknown, because even when he played right guard last year, while he held up well, he did make some mental mistakes. Now, the moves that they made, I believe they are smart for many reasons, because it's DJ Humphreys next to a veteran Mike Iupati, a smart, physical, you know, wise veteran in Mike Iupati. You stick the youngster Evan Bain between Veldier and Shipley. So I think, you know, theoretically, it's good. But it could be really bad. Now, obviously, it can't be much worse than it was last year, as they started three left tackles, two left guards, five right guards, and I think three right tackles last year, which was incredibly, and four left tackles, I think. Yeah, because they started Humphreys, Watford, I can't remember if Wetzel started any games at right tackle. He might not have, so maybe only three, and Ulrich John. So, except for center, and in three of the positions, they had at least three players playing the position. So, I mean, in terms of stability, can they be healthy, and will they perform at the expected levels? What's your next question?
The next question is, you know, I think the biggest one from the off season, and that is, how do they replace Calais Campbell on the defensive line? You know, I wrote about it a little bit today. I think the hope, the goal is 60% of, you know, the snaps and the talent or stats, or, you know, however you want to delineate it, comes from Robert Kimdiche, and then you're hopeful that Josh Morrow and Olsen Pierre and you know, Ed Stinson, Xavier Williams, all of these other guys can make up that other, you know, maybe 30 to 40%. And, you know, if you get 90% of Calais Campbell from two or three guys, I think then you're in a good spot. But I really think it all rests on Kamdiche. And if you can get, you know, 60% of Calais Campbell out of Robert Kamdiche in his, you know, what will be basically his first year playing, I think you're in a good spot. But that's a huge question mark going in.
My second question is dealing with the health and physicality of training camp in the preseason. Last year, we recall, and Bruce Arians lamented it after the season, where he lamented the physicality, or the lack of physicality, how he was just trying to get through camp healthy for his veterans. And it bit him in the butt the first month of the season, as they just weren't, you know, after losing that game in New England, they just, you know, they get punched in the mouth in Buffalo and couldn't handle it. They got punched in the mouth against the Rams and couldn't handle it. They weren't physical enough, and will they stay healthy? I was talking to you off the air, and I've cited this stat basically over the last several years, is that the Cardinals in training camp in the preseason have been plagued, and you probably can do this for almost any NFL team, but they have lost a starter, possible starter, in each of the last 6 years, dating back to 2011. In 2011, it was Greg Toler, cornerback. He was going to be the starter there. And plus, he had lost Ryan Williams, the third round pick, second round pick running back, who just flamed out, just never got right. And he wasn't going to be a starter, but he was going to be a consistent contributor. 2012, it was Levi Brown, and then that, who knew how important Levi Brown was, and when you don't have Levi Brown anymore, and then you're left with everyone else. 2013, it was Jonathan Cooper. 2014, Darnell Dockett. 2015, it was Corey Peters. Now, last year, it's a little bit of a stretch, but if you're looking at who they lost for this season, you look at Mike Jenkins. He was a little bit of an unknown. He was a late camp signing. When it was evident that Justin Bethel wasn't going to be able to be the guy, Mike Jenkins looked like he was set to be the starter. Brandon Williams ended up being it, and Marcus Cooper took over. But Mike Jenkins was the guy they brought in. He had the pedigree, and he looked good. But then he got hurt twice, you know, broke his arm, broke his wrist or whatever, and then tore his ACL and that. So they've lost basically a starter every single camp. And, you know, can they avoid that this year? And how physical will they be? Because Arians promised all offseason after last season ended that training camp would be much more physical. He's been talking more about smarts and playing smarter in critical situations, but I think we want to see a much tougher camp. Not so much the camp cupcake he likes talking about, but making those guys work, making those guys hit so that they are ready when the lights come on in week one.
Yeah, I want to see, you know, what the physicality is of this team this year. I think they, one, fed into their 2015 as they had arrived. But two, I still think they really took New England lightly with Jimmy Garoppolo and didn't Yes. think much of that. That matchup. And, you know, I think that really set the tone for the first part of the year. And it unfortunately, you know, is something that we've seen a couple times from in the Arians era, is that if you fumble games you are supposed to win, when it comes time, you know, at the end of the season, you're just going to be too far gone. And we saw that in 2013, understandably, and then obviously last year. I don't really chalk anything up to 2014, because what are you going to do with Drew Stanton as your quarterback? I mean,
Ryan Lindley.
Yeah, he went 5-3. You can't really be upset about that. So.
No, going to that New England game, now that's something that's come up at Arians' time. I talked about really all their issues stem from that. And as much criticism he's taken from that, I believe it to a certain extent. That wasn't just a Jimmy Garoppolo New England Patriots. That was a New England Patriots that did not have Tom Brady, that did not have Nate Solder, that did not have Rob Gronkowski, and did not have Rob Ninkovich to start the year. That was tailor-made. And remember, we talked about this. It was really a no win situation for the Cardinals, because they win and beat those Patriots. They didn't prove anything, but they lose and they lost to that. And I think, you know, they kind of took them lightly, especially Garoppolo's ability. And then when they lost at the last minute, when they didn't, when they thought they had it won with the missed kick, I think it really rattled them. Because one, they weren't used to losing like that, because they've always won like that. You know, they put themselves in a position to win, and then they win. They didn't, and they did it to a team that was had with a bunch of backups. You know, and then they got punched in the mouth in Buffalo, and that set them back. But it does stem back to that week one loss. They win, and they still have the swagger and that confidence late in games, and they didn't have that confidence late in games. I mean, we saw. I mean, they got the last second win, but they just didn't make plays they needed to.
No, and I think you're right. And, you know, you talked about that swagger, and that kind of leads into my next question is how much of Buddha and the Badger do we get? You know, is this going to be something that we're going to get, or is this something that they hold back on a rookie and, you know, slow play him? And what are we going to get from him? In him being Buddha Baker in 2017, because I really, really believe this, and I've been thinking about this a lot. I really think the addition of Buddha Baker can allow the Cardinals to lessen the burden of Tyrann Mathieu and allow Mathieu to play maybe not as have to fill as many roles and in turn be healthier and be more productive. And I don't think we've seen that from him yet. And I really do think that is something that could, you know, be a positive, but they have to believe in Baker and what he is and what he can do for them.
My third question is also on the defensive side of the ball, and that's just in general. How will they fill those defensive holes? I mean, they sound very confident in the personnel they have. But we cannot deny the amount of talent that they lost. They lost Calais Campbell. They lost Tony Jefferson. They lost Marcus Cooper. They lost Kevin Minter. They lost DJ Swearinger. That's a whole bunch of contributors. And so this defense is really remade. Now, the move to Carlos Danzy, I'm not particularly worried about, as long as he doesn't suddenly age. Suddenly, it hasn't been old yet in terms of his play. The defensive line is a question. They don't need one person to step up, but if they can get the same type of production from a group of people, then we're in good shape, but we don't know that. The cornerback position, not that Marcus Cooper was great. Yes, he's in a Pro Bowl alternate, as Bruce Arians liked to point out, and he did get himself a nice contract. The cornerback position is still a question mark, even though it looks like it's going to be Justin Bethel. But there is really no Cardinal fan that trusts Bethel at this point. And will be quick to turn on it. Like every single second quarterback that the Cardinals have had since Patrick Peterson came into the league, they've hated them all. Every single one of them. Constantly. You look at the safeties, they really made, you know, they got Antoine Bethea, Tyvon Branch comes back, does he play? Tyrann Mathieu, is he healthy? I mean, there's a lot of holes it was a statistically very good defense, but it wasn't a great defense because of mistakes. I mean, you look at the numbers, that defense a year ago, you can look at the numbers and you could either look at them as a fraud or as promising, because you look at their statistical ranking and the number two overall in total defense, but then the middle of the pack in points. So you can look, oh, even with the Tyrann Mathieu that's basically was useless last year, they still had a number two defense and they didn't have any playmaking from him. But then you look at the number two defense, but they were really a bad defense because they gave up so many points. And so my question is, can they fill those defensive holes? And that includes the injury to Daniel Buchanan. Can Hassan Reddick fill in?
And I think all those questions are fair. And, you know, kind of hinting at what I wrote for tomorrow for my defensive back preview, the secondary is Patrick Peterson and then a bunch of question marks. I mean, we know there's talent. We know Tyrann Mathieu's talented. We know that Antoine Bethea has been a nice player in his career. We know that Tyvon Branch can flash productivity. We know that Buda Baker is a very highly thought of prospect. We know Justin Bethel and Brandon Williams are elite level athletes, even you know, on the same level as Patrick Peterson. But we don't know if any of them are actually good, because none of them have, you know, in Tyrann Mathieu and Tyvon Branch case, they've never been healthy, literally never. I mean, they've had healthy spurts in a season, but I don't think either of them have made it through a full season as a starter healthy. Antoine Bethea is 33. How good is he going to be at 33? All of a sudden you have a 35-year-old inside linebacker and a 33-year-old strong safety. You know, so all of a sudden you've gotten really old in two positions you were actually fairly young in. And then the you know, I talked about the Baker and Badger question, and I think that's, you know, I think all of that is completely 100% fair, and you have to ask that question, because we just don't know who or what they are yet as a defense. We know that on paper there is loads of talent, but does that talent produce the on game day, and how much does it produce, and are we able to see the growth of this team into a, you know, kind of a Seahawks Ravens-esque team that is known for being a defensive giant?
Well, what's your final question for your fourth and final one for the Cardinals entering camp?
They spent an asinine amount of money on a kicker. And that's not to say I disagree with it. I'm just saying, when you look at the contract, it's a lot of money for a kicker. So does that mean special teams are fixed? You know, that, what does that exactly mean for the special teams? They still have two pretty much unknowns at punter. So what are we getting with special teams, and how do we know whether or not these guys are going to answer the bell? I like Aaron Brewer as the long snapper, and I really do like the Phil Dawson signing, but what do we know about Matt Weil and Richie Leone, other than, as you like to say, have never won a punting competition in the NFL?
And my final question is simply this. Has the window closed? I mean, you've got an aging Bruce Arians at coach who's had health issues. You have an aging Carson Palmer who could not stay, who had a solid season statistically, but wasn't the same quarterback he was a year ago. I mean, he's now at a point in his career where the Cardinals are limiting his work. Larry Fitzgerald, can he keep producing it? You know, he's 109, 107 reception. How many more seasons of that does he have? Phil Dawson, Carlos Dansby, Antoine Bethea. As good as Dawson's been, we also saw the very, very rapid decline and demise of another guy in Dave Zastadil, the punter, and Drew Butler beat him out, for crying out loud. With those guys, it goes away quick. He's been consistent, but has the window closed, and did they waste their opportunity? Because they were in perfect position in 2014, followed that up in 2015. Last year was a disaster. Do they have anything left is my final question. And so, or is the window closed and we're just now entering the fight for competitiveness as opposed to a fight for winning at all?
You know, I think that's a fair question, and I don't know the answer, because they've basically done on defense what you would have expected them to do on offense, and statistically speaking, as you said, the defense is the one that's gotten better every year with all these young guys that they're bringing in and spot veterans, whereas the offense has, as you pointed out, ebbed and flowed throughout. But they overhauled what was mostly a young defense. I mean, you look at it, Calais Campbell, obviously in his early 30s, but young Kevin Minter, young Marcus Cooper, young DJ Swearinger and Tony Jefferson, all young players that are gone now. And so is the building, the continuing to get the offense, or sorry, the defense younger, faster, stronger, is that going to work out, or is it going to sabotage and put too much pressure on an aging offense to be great and carry a team that needs some time to build the defense? And so I think that's a fair question. Did the window close? And if so, did it close in 2015 and, you know, nobody got the memo?
All right, and that'll wrap up the segment that we have on questions. Now, coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about players that we're watching. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and continuing with our training camp preview, let's look at the players that we're watching. I wrote a piece on Wednesday about 7 Cardinals to watch in training camp. Seth has picked 5. It's 6, actually, and I'll pick my 5 out of those 7 that in particular that I'm most intrigued about. My number one player to watch this offseason, this camp, actually, call me crazy, I am most intrigued about quarterback Blaine Gabbert. Call me crazy. For me, I'm really interested because of the reading between the lines, just the little snippets we keep hearing about Gabbert and the comments that people are making within the organization tell me that while, yes, this year he's a throwaway guy, it's a throwaway contract, to put it the number 3, but these guys that within the organization, team president Michael Bidwill said it, offensive coordinator Harold Goodman talked about it, you know, about the future with Blaine Gabbert, the weapons that he has for the future. Bruce Arians sees it as well. You know, they really think that he could be in the mix in 2018. Carson Palmer's gone. We might be looking at Blaine Gabbert as a possibility for starting quarterback, which means, considering as bad as he's been, and you talked about him in one of our last shows, you talked to me about this off the air, that his game tape is, you know, horrific, scary. Like, you're watching him, you're like, how are you even in the NFL when there's clearly ability in there? So he's my first player to watch because I think he's a lock for the roster unless he is absolutely terrible. And if he's not absolutely terrible, I want to see what they have. Is he salvageable? Is he really broken? Or is Bruce Arians going to work one more bit of magic on a highly touted quarterback coming out of college? What's your number one?
Real quick on Gabbert, I think he is probably the most intriguing because, as I wrote about, there's nothing better or more important in the NFL than a cheap quarterback contract. And let's just play hypotheticals here and say he plays well in the preseason and earns a roster spot. And then in the offseason of 2018, we fast forward and the Cardinals, after winning the Super Bowl, are going to go to, you know, Blaine Gabbert and say, we want to extend you, we want to bring you back. Well, you look at contracts around the league and you're going to be right around $5 million a year for a guy like Gabbert, a guy like Drew Stanton, who are backup quarterbacks that are going to get a chance. So can you get him on a 3-year, $15 million deal? I mean, it sounds asinine. They're really going to pay Blaine Gabbert 3 years, $15 million. But if they truly believe that he can be the next guy, that's a contract you have to offer and hope he takes. And if he takes it and he turns out to be, you know, a top 20 quarterback, and I know there's only 32, but a top 20 quarterback in the NFL, all of a sudden you're staring at a guy that gives you a chance to make the playoffs. Maybe you're not a Super Bowl team, but maybe you're a continual playoff team. And you know, as an Arizona Cardinal fan, that's not something that we are used to. So if you're able to do that and really kind of build the team around him, you know, maybe that is a positive. Now, all that being said, I don't know if any of that happens, but it would be fantastic. My first, you know, kind of intrigue is a duo, and it's the right guard position. Are we going to get Evan Bain? Are we going to get Cole Toner? Who wins that job? Who takes that job and who becomes the right guard? You know, they spent money, not much, on Evan Mathis last year. It didn't work out. So now they're going the young, cheap route and see what they get. I'm intrigued. I want to see these guys compete, and I want to see one of them, you know, kind of grab the bull by the horns and be the guy on this roster that, you know, helps propel this offensive line to the next level.
And for me, my number two guy is cornerback Justin Bethel. You've probably heard me say here on this show many times over the last while is that, you know, I haven't given up on Justin Bethel. I know most of the fan base does not trust him. You know, entering the offseason, I believed all along that it was going to be Bethel and Williams and probably Bethel winning the starting job, but simply because he's healthy. There is something to the health issue, but I am watching him with intrigue this training camp because he's healthy. One, does he stay healthy? And number two, what does he show as a cornerback, because he flashed late last year in the nickel, but he's not going to be playing that. That's not his position. But on the outside, can he hold up and be at least as effective as Marcus Cooper? Because Marcus Cooper, even though he's a Pro Bowl alternate, definitely had his moments of not being good. So if Bethel can be a decent cornerback, that's one of the things I want to see.
And I have Bethel and Williams, so again, kind of cheating, but that cornerback two position, does somebody actually want it this year, or does somebody just – or somebody given the position again, and we kind of – let's see what happens. I want to see what happens. I want somebody to grab that position. You know, if it's Bethel, that's slightly unfortunate because he's a free agent at the end of the year, but maybe that gives – Brandon Williams one more year to develop, and then they get two solid years out of Brandon Williams. But you want to see somebody, one of these guys, take this job and make it theirs.
Who's your number three?
My number three is Troy Nicholas, and everybody might say, well, this is stupid, but the Cardinals tight end depth chart after Jermaine Gresham is basically a dumpster fire at this point. Troy Nicholas is a bust in every sense of the word. Is it injury-based? That's what I'm hoping, and not the fact that he just is not good, but he has, you know, been, and he has been injured his entire career. Ifeanyi Moma is another guy that's been injured basically every year, and he doesn't exactly inspire confidence. He's a nice receiving kind of tight end, but he's not really a guy that you make as your tight end two in an offense. Hakeem Ballas is kind of the opposite. He's not a bad blocker, but he's definitely not a guy you want to run out there to catch passes. And then Ricky Seals-Jones is a guy that's transitioning from wide receiver to tight end. And then you have
Ifeanyi Moma 2.0.
Right. And then you have Steven Robleski, who, you know, maybe he's the intriguing one. Maybe he's the guy. But my point why I listed all those names is because you want Troy Nicholas to win this job, because it would be great to be able to have two tight ends that can do the same thing, that are interchangeable, that, okay, you know, Jermaine Gresham's lined up on the right, Troy Nicholas is lined up on the left. You can send either out into a route. You can keep either one into pass protect, or you can run David Johnson behind either one of them and feel like you're going to have a successful play. And right now you don't have that. And that's what you need for this team to on offense to really get humming and to be one of the better offenses in the NFL again.
My number three is tackle DJ Humphreys playing left tackle, being handed that job. I'm interested to see how he handles it. How much patience will the Cardinals have with him, and how much patience will the fans have with him? He should be very good. But after this last several years of Jerry Belair, who's been a very solid, not great, he's had flashes of great, but mostly very dependable play at left tackle. I'm watching DJ Humphreys to see how he handles that. Is he now going to take hold of the leadership that comes with playing left tackle? And can he be as nasty as we know he can be? That's my number three.
And I think that's fair. I just think that we saw for three games a glimpse of a guy that can be a top 10 left tackle in the NFL. And that's probably Lomas Brown territory at that point as the best left tackle for the Arizona Cardinals. Lewis Sharp was really good, but you know, there's some other things involved in that. But when you look at it, you know, can Humphreys be the best left tackle in the Arizona portion of the Cardinals history? Because it's not exactly a, you know, teaming with talent. And so you would hope that he grabs that mantle and, you know, really takes it on. Is that unfair to him? I don't know. I mean, is it unfair to hope he has a Lomas Brown-like career? Is that really that high of expectations?
What about your number four?
I talked about him earlier, but I mean, got to stay with it. Robert Kimdiche, he has to be a force this year. Like I said, I don't need him to be a force for the same, 998 snaps or whatever Calais Campbell was a force for. But if you give me 600, 650 snaps, holy cow, and you're productive in those 650, I think that gives you hope moving forward that you're not rebuilding, but you just retooled. And now you have a young player for the next, you know, 6 to 8 years to fill that role.
My number four is receiver John Brown, who, you know, last year was a down year, and we're not going to put that on him, but he was concussed early. He had sickle cell trait. He apparently had a cyst on his spine that had to be drained. That was probably the issue of a lot of his leg issues, his leg burning. You know, every bit as much as the Cardinals need Robert Kimdiche to dominate, they need John Brown to do the same, because they need that speed. Michael Floyd wasn't in last year. John Brown wasn't in last year. But with John Brown as a threat down the field making plays in 2015, that offense was special. They absolutely need production from Brown to be able to be more than just a sometimes strong offense that sputters. That they need him to be consistent to be great. And my final is Hassan Reddick. I'm watching him for a couple of reasons. One, in the preseason, he's going to be playing linebacker, that inside backer position in place of Dale Buchanan. I want to see how he does. I honestly don't want to see him play much in the regular season because I hope Dale Buchanan's back. So I'm watching him for that reason, because they drafted him eventually play inside backer. So hopefully I want to see him play. And then I want to see him in his original role for this year as a pass rusher. You know, that burst off the ball, can he be disruptive as a pass rusher, and does he show a little bit of flash at linebacker?
And my last guy is Antoine Bethea, and I talked about him earlier, but the Cardinals need, and they have produced safeties with little effort, it seems like, quality safety play, but the Cardinals need him to be good. They need him to be a player that is a leader and a tone setter on the defensive side of the ball. And can he do that? Can he be a guy that stays on the field? And that age and what he was in San Francisco, and I know that defense was awful, so it's really hard to bring him out and really separate his play because there was so little talent around him. But in the same way, he's filling in for, you know, the Tony Jefferson and DJ Swearinger roles. Is he able to produce at the same level that those guys did, who both, you know, produced at very quality levels? It's going to be one to watch, and one that I'm going to really focus on in camp is, what does this guy have left in the tank? Because we're not just talking about 1 year, right? We're talking about multiple year contract. This wasn't Carlos Dansby where he just got 1 year. This is a guy that got a multi-year deal. So.
And so that wraps up our, the five players each of us is watching for training camp this year. So coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about the intriguing, What are the battles? What are the training camp battles that we are watching? And then we'll actually wrap that up as well, because there, you know, we're going to find out there's not a whole bunch of them in terms of big ones. Who are the undrafted? We'll go with that right now. So coming back on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about the position battles, roster battles, starting battles, whatever they are. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on Rise Up Sea Red, and now let's, you know, entering training camp. We've got some position battles. Not necessarily for starting jobs. There's really on offense, there's really not much up for grabs, unless you're talking about what is wide receiver three, maybe, between Jerron Brown and JJ Nelson. And other than that, on the offensive side of the ball, there's nothing in terms of starting, right?
No, I mean, no, there's nothing. I mean, I think we're going to find a right guard battle, but it's just going to be kind of blasé.
I think the bigger battle on the offensive line is the roster battle. Who are the backups? And the numbers are going to be tough, because they used two draft picks on offensive linemen for Dorian Johnson and Will Holden. And so obviously, you know, if their potential is anything, you want to think that they want to use up those roster spots. But, you know, Cole Toner's a lock. You'd think that John Wetzel's a lock. And then, are they going to keep 8? Are they going to keep 9? Are they going to keep 10 offensive linemen? Because if they keep 9, that means that's Dorian Johnson and then either Will Holden or an Ulrich John or Gibbons Price. So it'll be interesting to see how that shapes up, because that's not a sexy battle. It's for football guys. I mean, it's fun to pay attention to, but that's not something the fans are going to get fired up about, is who are your 8th and 9th offensive linemen on the roster, but it's there.
And I think there is some intrigue in terms of the 5th, and how many wide receivers do they keep? Do they keep 6 wide receivers? So you look at it, you figure relative locks as Fitz, John Brown, JJ Nelson, and Chad Williams. So if they keep 5, then that's a lot of guys for that last spot. If they keep 6, I think we could probably pencil in Jerron Brown, and then you have one more spot. Does it go to a veteran like Britton Golden? Does it go to a guy like Krishan Hogan, who played at a small school, had a massive growth spurt, and became this monster player at a small school? Does it go to a guy like Marquise Bundy, who they kept around after a off-field incident that was really nothing, but it was still an off-field incident for a guy that is basically a replaceable person on the roster. At least that's what we thought. Larry Clark, you know, there's all these guys that are really just guys, but how many people do they keep? And if they keep five, it feels like, you know, the five, maybe one guy can overcome Jerron Brown.
Although no one's done it right. since he came into the league.
He's coming off an ACL, which is makes it slightly different. But I'm with you. Nobody's done it. But, you know, there's really no intrigue on the offense outside of, to me, that right guard position and what happens there.
I think the Blaine Gabbert, it's not a battle. I mean, as much as some writers locally who believe that there's a battle between Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert, there's no battle between Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert because the Cardinals believe they're a contending team. There is no way in the world that they're going to enter the 2017 season with Blaine Gabbert as a backup when they don't know what they have. They know what they have in Drew Stanton, and they know they can win games with him.
And I think when you look at it, there is a battle, but it's just Blaine Gabbert versus himself. And, you know, so far he's lost that battle every season. But I think
that makes that fun roster battle. That's one of those things to write. Position battles. Blaine Gabbert versus himself.
but I think you hope this is different. You hope that he shows something and it's not this dumpster fire of a preseason and then he's on the roster and you're like, really? Like, what did you see? He was awful, you know, type thing. But I think he's going to get some run with the ones. It doesn't mean anything. It means that, as Jess just said, one, they're giving Carson Palmer as many days off as possible, and two, they know what they have in Drew Stanton. They don't need to get Drew Stanton a ton of run with the ones. You know, it's not going to be in the first preseason game, but I wouldn't be shocked in game two of the preseason if he took the second snaps over Stanton, and then Stanton in game three, which would be, you know, everybody else's game two, but their game three, Stanton took the majority of the first team reps. And then in game four, if they do dress maybe everybody not named Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer, David Johnson, maybe again you get Blaine Gabbert with the starting offensive line and, you know, the Kerwin Williams and the wide receiver one, John Brown and J.J. Nelson, wide receiver two type thing. But I think you're going to see that, so it won't be a shock when it happens, but it's going to be fun to watch because you're hopeful that you see a reclamation. You're hopeful that you see a guy that has bounced around to bad situations, and they are. I mean, I have friends that are Jaguars fans, and they know Blaine Gabbert's been terrible and was terrible and may still be terrible, but they also know his situation in Jacksonville was awful. You know, it's not like he was exactly set up to be the next, you know, Derek Carr by any means in Jacksonville. So when you look at it, you're hopeful for that sense, but offensively, there's just not much intrigue. And other than how many do they keep, that's what the intrigue is. Do they keep nine offensive linemen? You and I both think they do. Do they keep five or six wide receivers? Well, if they keep six, who's the sixth? Do they keep three tight ends or do they keep four? You know, do they keep four running backs or do they only keep three? Like, what do they do at all these positions?
And they might even keep five because if they end up signing Chris Johnson, you might see a Johnson, Williams, Penny, and TJ Logan because they all fill different roles.
Right. So I think that overall, that's what you look at, you know, and that's what you want to see.
Defensive side of the ball and the defensive line, there is some – I mean, there's definitely a battle for playing time. Started nose. It looks like, as of right now, Josh Morrow is – he's the starter. He started 13 games last year, but it was – he played specifically in specific packages, and they just happened to start in that package a lot. It looks like he's slated to play Calais's position on the right side of the defensive line. And then it becomes a matter of who starts on the left side. Is it Frosty Rucker? Or before, is it Rodney Gunter? Is it Robert Kimdichie? There's a little bit intrigue there, but there's more about how many, because they kept 9 defensive linemen on the roster all year, not a single transaction, not a single change. They only have 9 defensive linemen on the roster this year, and that's losing Calais Campbell and bringing in some, you know, undrafted guy out of Utah. I don't think they can carry 9 defensive linemen again, and so we're probably looking at 7. Who's going to be the guys that, you know, Tessini's probably going to be bounced. So if they keep 7, that means, is it Ed Stinson? Is it Xavier Williams? Is it, and it's not going to be Frosty Rucker. So it basically comes down to, is it Gunter? Unlikely. Is it Xavier Williams? Maybe, but they really like him. Is it Ed Stinson? But yeah, the defensive line, there's a little bit in terms of starting, maybe the Kimdichie, Rodney Gunter, Frosty Rucker, Olson Pierre. But after that, it's more about how much do they play.
Yeah, and one of the things that you hit on that, you know, real quick is Frosty Rucker, and I wrote about this today. He would be like the only surprise cut. I mean, obviously, if they cut Robert Kimdichie or Corey Peters or Rodney Gunter guys penciled in to start, you'd be surprised. But Rucker would be the only surprise cut to me. And the reason he'd be a surprise cut is because Corey Peters is a veteran, don't get me wrong, but Rucker has been around for a long, long time. He's really the only...
And he's the leader of the room.
Right. He's the only veteran voice in that room. Peters is a great guy, don't get me wrong, but he's not the veteran voice of Rucker. So, you know, is he a guy that's going to play a ton of snaps? Probably not. You probably only want to see him play at most 15 snaps a game, but he's a guy that's going to help Kimdichie. He's going to help Gunter. He's going to help Pierre. He's going to help Williams. He's going to help these young guys take the next step to being good players. The other thing is, who's Tessini? Is that the guy from Utah?
Tessini.
Yeah, Tessini. The likelihood that he makes the roster is basically zero to start with. But one of the things that we've seen with the Cardinals is that they tend to find big guys, offensive and defensive line, for their practice squad from outside of what they had in camp. Every once in a while they'll put a, you know, Xavier Williams on there, but for the most part they tend to bring these guys in from outside of camp and you know, get a new look, because you've already seen what this big guy can and can't do. So
obviously there's the position battle at cornerback, even though Justin Bethel has a clear lead. After that, it's for the defensive backfield, because the safety rotation seems pretty set. I mean, Tyvon Branch has his role. Antoine Bethea's got his role. Tyrann Mathieu's got his role. You figure Buda Baker's going to have a role. Do they keep 8, 9, 10 defensive backs? If it's 9, who do they keep after, you know, the 4 safeties and the 3 or 4 corners? We presume probably the 4th corner will be Eli Buka. But after that, I mean, is it Harlan Miller? Is it Rudy Ford? Miller's already kind of proven himself. The Cardinals don't have a good track record with their 6th-round picks making the roster. But Ford, you know, they had him at cornerback early, and then they moved him to safety. That's never a good thing when you have him moving back to a position. It gives you the thought that probably he didn't cut it, or maybe it was just a need. Maybe he had a better chance of making the roster to safety. So there's some intrigue there. But more, the special teams, obviously, punter, that's a boring one, but it's an important one. But the kickoff and the kickoff and punt returns, is, they've got a few guys in there. We figure it'll be T.J. Logan at kicks. But a punt return, is it Patrick Peterson? Is it J.J. Nelson? Is it Jeremy Ross? Is it Brittany Golden?
Can Logan return kicks? I don't think he can, but can he? Or not kicks, but punts, you know. He hasn't done it much, but can he be a dual threat and save a roster spot, or save Patrick Peterson?
Yeah, and so that, you know, that really kind of wraps up. This basically is a team that it's, you know, what it's going to look like. It's just a matter of,
are they going to be good? Yeah, there's probably 8 roster spots, maybe 10, if we're being really generous, to fight for.
Okay, let's wrap this up with quickly going down. Every year there's undrafted players who kind of catch the imagination. Who are, do you have, you know, 2 or 3 undrafted free agents you see perhaps grabbing the attention of the fans? Almost undoubtedly there will be at least one receiver, but who are guys that we could watch as the undrafted guys to make an impact?
I think obviously, I talked about it earlier, but I think Ricky Seals-Jones and Steven Wroblewski are both guys to watch. I think both of them could end up on the practice squad. We've seen that before from the Cardinals with Moma and Vallis both getting, you know, moved to practice squad before. So I think that's something you could see with them. But, you know, Seals-Jones is really intriguing. He was a 5-star recruit out of high school, played wide receiver. Can he be kind of a big-bodied tight end / wide receiver? That'll be one to watch. When you have obviously
there's 3 receivers.
There's 3 receivers, but I think I wanted to mention Trevor Knight, because I think you're going to get a lot of intrigue with Knight because he is so athletic. And I think that's going to make a lot of people intrigued by what he is and what he can do as a player.
I mean, how much did fans love Phillip Sims?
Woo! That's what and there's that too. Everybody loves the backup quarterback. Larry Clark, Krishan Hogan, and Carlton Aguadosi are 3 big-bodied wide receivers. If I had to put money on one guy making it out of here, it'd be Krishan Hogan. And a little insight into this, my cousin played football at Marion with Krishan. And basically, he told me basically their offense, anytime they got into the red zone, was get the ball to Krishan Hogan. That's how much of a man amongst boys he was. And now it's NAIA football. So you're saying, okay, well, you know, it's NAIA. But as I said, when you look at him statistically, that's what you want to see from a guy that is playing at a low level. You want to see utter domination, almost 1700 receiving yards as a senior. He was a guy that they would move to the Wildcat formation to let him run the ball in because he was such a good athlete down there. So he's a guy to watch. You know, can he be the Michael Floyd replacement? You know, the big-bodied, deep threat wide receiver that they are looking for. And I think it's obvious that they are. They didn't want to invest a draft pick in it, but they, you know, they've got Larry Clark, who's a big guy. They've got Carlton Aguadosi, who's a big guy. They got Hogan, who's a big guy. They brought in Aaron Dobson, former second round pick of the Patriots, who's a big guy. You know, so they want a guy that can be a jump ball receiver, 50-50 ball guy. They have Nelson and Brown. They don't need speed. What they need is, you know, somebody that can box out and win 50-50 jump balls. And so if I had to pick one, it'd be Hogan. Offensive line, I hate saying this because, you know, you never know, but there's basically a 0% chance an undrafted free agent that's not John Wetzel makes the roster, right? Like, I mean, right. maybe Ulrich John, maybe, and again, he was an undrafted free agent, but he's not an undrafted free agent this year. Like, there's no spot for the dude from Virginia Tech that weighs 289 pounds. Like,
yeah, John McLaughlin, Caleb Johnson, the center's Lucas Roily.
Yeah, they're not making the roster. Now, again, maybe they like one of those guys enough to put them on the practice squad. But you got to remember, They have Evan Bame. They've invested time in Cole Toner to be kind of the swingman everywhere guy. So do they need a guy in Crowley who's a pure center? Probably not. They have Will Holden. They have John Wetzel. Do they really need another undersized left tackle? Probably not. So, I don't. Hogan's the one guy that I could see sneaking onto this roster as an undrafted free agent, but he's still got a huge uphill battle. Not just undrafted
free agent. The receiver is tough.
But, Jerron Brown, Britton Golden, Aaron Dobson, and Jeremy Ross are all guys that are going to have something to say about that as established NFL players. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, is there anybody?
Sojourn Shelton is the only guy to pay attention to.
Right. And
because they threw a lot of money at him. That's why.
Well, and when I talked to Bucky's Fifth Quarter, I believe is the name of the SB Nation site. And then I have a buddy, Owen Reese, who's from Wisconsin. And so I talked to them both about Sojourn. One of the things that they raved about Shelton is what he does on specials. So we know that they're trying to get better there. But, if Shelton makes the team, who's that cut? Is that Harlan Miller? Is that Rudy Ford? Is that
Ellie Buka?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so you're – again, I mean, we're in a numbers game where there's not a lot of spots to be filled, and that's a good thing as long as the Cardinals are good. It's a bad thing if they fall under 500 again, because then you start to wonder, did we become brainwashed into thinking that all these guys were good and they weren't, and what have we been watching instead? I still think they're good. I still think they're going to be a team that fights for a playoff spot and should, be a team that makes the playoffs. But that is the one concern when you don't have a lot of turnover and you're coming or don't have a lot of question marks. You had a lot of turnover, but you don't have a lot of question marks heading into camp and you're coming off a disappointing season, is you better get better, or now you're starting to question your pro scouting, obviously your college scouting, you're starting to question all of the scouting and what is being seen in these guys that is allowing there to be what feels like zero, not a ton of competition in a camp coming off a 7-8-1 season.
Yeah, and we've talked about there's not really in terms of much surprises. I don't know if we can make any predictions yet, but this is an important year. I mean, this could be the last.
This could be the end of the chapter.
We could see Palmer chapter. It's an important year. And so there aren't, like we said, there's not a lot of, the biggest burning question is, are they good? Was last year a fluke, or are they really done? And that, I guess that'll bring us to the end of our training camp preview. I think we probably won't do a show next week because camp will just have barely started and they won't even have pads on. So we'll probably be back unless something happens of note. We probably won't be back next week, but we'll talk about the ins and outs of training camp and leading up to the Hall of Fame game in 2 weeks. Rise Up C-Ray can be found everywhere. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. It's featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on CardsWire.com, on Blog Talk Radio. It's also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, anywhere you can find good podcasts or even, average podcasts or whatever you want to call this podcast, you can find it. Again, this is Rise Up C-Ray. Training camp is here, and it is time to go Cardinals now.